This is
Cyber Station USA.
I warn you, their ingenuity goes hand in hand with their technology.
I think it's fair to call this hostile territory.
For you, I'll make an exception.
What you hold in your hand is the proof of their power.
Come here. You're not hurt, right?
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at TotalTutor, NeilHaley.com, and TotalRadioNet, and I'm excited to welcome the program. We all know him from The Biggest Loser, Bob Harper. Bob, thanks for calling, man, and how are you?
I'm good, Neil. How's it going?
Fantastic. Now you're another role for you, Bob. We all know, based on your background, the success you had with The Biggest Loser, you took off in a lot of variety of ways, writing books, doing all these different things entrepreneurial-wise. Am I correct, Bob?
That's correct. I've been really fortunate.
Yeah, and so now we're talking about the new Celebrity Apprentice tonight at 8 p.m., and you are an advisor, Bob. What, is this new to you in a way of being in a boardroom and advising people in those ways, or is it almost kind of like what you were doing, advising people with their weight and health and things?
Yeah, I think that being in the boardroom was kind of like being in the gym. It was just I was in a suit as opposed to wearing workout clothes, but I have to say that it was really exciting to do. It was a lot of fun working with Arnold Schwarzenegger and also getting to meet Boy George. That was really super cool to me.
Absolutely. That's got to be cool. And just kind of looking at all the different celebrities that are on The Celebrity Apprentice, maybe some of them you've met before in passing, but never Boy George then, right, Bob?
Yeah, no. Never got to meet Boy George, and that was a lot of fun. I mean, he was definitely... Yeah, I was a big fan of his in the 80s and still am.
So, Bob, your role as an advisor, are you following the two teams or one of the teams in what's going on in their latest project? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, the challenge that you'll see on the show is a fitness-related challenge where they're getting people on the boardwalk out in California super excited about these snack options, and you know they create this whole buzz out there, both teams, and what they're trying to do is get a lot of people in there and make it exciting and sell a lot of products. So they wanted me to come in and kind of collaborate with them and give them a couple of different ideas. But they did a really good job.
Absolutely, and you see how important it is for each one of the contestants because of celebrity contestants, because it's their charity, right, Bob? It's something that they really see important to raise money for that charity, right?
Yeah, and I think that's what's so cool about this show. I mean, since Apprentice has been on, they've made like $15 million for different charities. And these celebrities, they come in and they work super hard, and what they're really trying to do is get some attention on their charity and get some money in, for their charity. So I think what they're doing is super cool.
When you're advising Arnold, especially seeing the task that's at hand during this task, how many of the celebrities are willing to listen to some of your advice before they get to the boardroom? Are we going to be surprised by that? And you know, because we see sometimes that you say one thing and they do something else.
Yeah, I think that, of course, when you're working with type A people, you know, they have their own agenda and they have their own ideas. I think that there definitely were people that were receptive to listening. But you kind of just, like, listen to what they want to do and just hope to kind of clean it up a little bit for them.
It sounds like exactly what you do as a personal trainer, Bob, and as a host, right? You're kind of advising.
Totally.
Good.
You give them some information, and you give them a lot of information, and you hope that they take, you know, one or two bites of it.
Absolutely. Who do you see who's remaining, Bob? Could you give us any thoughts of anyone you think that's really strong, in your opinion, from the contestants who are left in The Celebrity Apprentice?
Well, without giving anything away, I mean, there's definitely some big fans of mine seem to be like the people to really watch.
So you don't have a favorite, or you can't do that, Bob. Be an advisor. You can't be a. There's no.
Well,
yeah.
It's hard to take a favorite when you got to be objective. But I got to say, you know, I love that boy George, man. Let me tell you.
So what do you think of him? Especially, I'm sure you've watched the other shows because you're a fan, right, Bob? Because then going into filming, you've watched the Apprentice before and different things like that, I'm sure, especially it being on NBC. And then coming into this situation, you probably watched some of the other shows develop. What do you like about Boy George as an entrepreneur, especially in this process?
Well, I think that Boy George came in and he was, like, really super serious about helping with his charity, and like he didn't phone it in, you know what I mean? He didn't just kind of like get on the show and just kind of do it 50%. I mean, I like people that that go into any kind of project they're doing and give 100%, and that's what I saw with him. I saw the same thing with like Carson Kressley. I mean, I think that he's a great guy, so you know, they did a really good job.
Interesting. And you, what you're saying is, you know this from being part of this business, that, you know, you have a charity and sometimes they just have other people doing everything and they're really not paying attention to what's happening in their foundation or charity. Right, Bob? Like having really wanting to raise money. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, like, you know, they come on to Celebrity Apprentice and they really want to, help their charity. And I think that that is something to be respected.
What is your overall opinion of Arnold Schwarzenegger as the boss in a way? What kind of delegation do you see with him and how he handles things and stuff in the boardroom?
Well, I think he's awesome. I think that the guy comes in and he's very disciplined. I was talking about this not too long ago, and I was saying that Arnold Schwarzenegger is like the classic American dream. He came in as this fitness Mr. Olympia guy, and I mean, he has made such a career out of himself. And I just have nothing but respect for that man.
Well, you being in fitness, you had to have been a fan of Arnold Schwarzenegger in some sort of way, because of how he took the bodybuilding brand and became a celebrity actor and then governor. You just got to say, wow, he took that, his platform, his opportunities, and he went for it, which helps everyone in fitness.
Absolutely. It's like to see what he has done with his career. I mean, man, he is really taking it to a whole other level.
Well, I can't wait to see what you're doing, Bob, for sure. Everyone needs to check out The Celebrity Apprentice tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern. Anything going on with you? Any news to report with Bob Harper and different things you're doing right now?
Yeah, I'm working on a new book right now that I'm really excited about. I'm doing a lot of work co-hosting with Rachel Ray. That's been a lot of fun for me. You know, I'm just like, I'm staying busy out here.
Hey, and it's good, you know, and it's a different way and still keeping up with staying in shape, right, Bob, and trying to motivate others every time you rub elbows with somebody, especially with that host opportunity you had with The Biggest Loser. You've taken that now and say, okay, I have this, but I'll always will be telling people, eat healthy, right? That's your ultimate mission, Bob, right? Is for people to get in shape and end some of these diseases and stuff, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that is what I do for a living. I'm getting ready to go work out when I get off the phone right now.
All right. Well, best place we can find information on you, Bob, and learn more about you. Where can we go? What's the best place?
You can find me right now at my Instagram, Trainer Bob. That's where you can find all of what I'm doing right now.
All right. Well, fabulous, Bob. Best of luck. Thanks for coming on the show. And I can't wait to tune in tonight and see you as an advisor. Take care, Bob.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Neil Haley Show on the Total Celebrity segment. I'm excited to welcome the program Fran Drescher and Adam Pally of NBC's Indebted. Guys, thanks for calling, and I appreciate you coming by.
Oh, our pleasure. Thanks for supporting us in this way.
Yeah, we're doing great.
Awesome. Let's go, Fran. Now, when you got the script, what did you think of this? Because I was kind of watching different things, and of this character and going back to comedy in this way. What are your thoughts of this once you got the script and saw what your character
You know, I think that I'm a Boo Jew. That's a Buddhist Jew. And, you know, sometimes it's good to just let the river carry you. And I was about to go out and start pitching ideas for a show that I created that I thought was good for me, but which is normally the way I do it. But this kind of just came to me, fell in my lap. It was described, my character, as a Fran Drescher type. The network was high on it. They were high on him. I like the idea of doing a kind of baby boomer meets millennial show. The studio is the studio I work with on The Nanny and Hotel Transylvania, and is the nearest to my house. My parents were thrilled because they could never find Happily Divorced on cable, and everybody can find the Peacock Network. So, you know, once I met Adam and Dan Levy, I knew that, you know, if they wanted me to join the cast, I could fit in with these people and feel very, you know, like familial with them. And that's important to me. And so, yes. You know, I just decided to dive in and say, okay, I'll join this party.
You know, it's interesting.
I'm a juju. Yeah. Just a Jew.
So, Adam, when you got...
So I'm a
fan.
And I'm sure you're pumped up with the cast you got to work with, right, Adam? This is such an all-star cast and such a great project for you.
Oh, yeah, Murderer's Row of comedic talent. I mean, just up top with Fran and then Steven Weber, who is just one of the funniest actors I've ever worked with. And it's such a joy to be around. And Abby Elliott is so funny. And Jesse Hodges is amazing. So I feel really lucky that I feel like, again, I just lucked into a situation where there's no weak link, and that not a lot of actors get that in their career, and I've had it a couple times.
Hey, Adam, you got to say, you got a great agent and you're a great talent, so there you go. Right?
Yeah. I wish I did. I wish I had a better one.
Now, Fran, tell us about your character.
He's under a lucky star.
Yeah. Fran, tell us about your character now and the premise of the show.
Well, it's kind of, I am half of a baby boomer couple who goes broke. They're really clueless about how to spend their money. They're very generous, loving people, but, you know, like just off the scale, out of control, and lose everything through a series of circumstances and come to their grown son's home and say, we're here, we're broke, get used to it. And suddenly the dynamic shifts, and now it's about, well, how are we going to do this from week to week? And, you know, blend these two energies, because in many ways, he's more parental than the parents.
And one of the things that I love the most about Fran's character and Steven's character is that in their financial irresponsibility, the actual tangible things are not as important to them as the love and the time shared with their family. And I can relate to that, I think, as well as a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely. And you see when your family comes over and you're like, okay, I got to change everything. And Fran, that's the kind of thing where you guys move in, then your kids have to kind of change, right? In so many ways, because you have a specific way of how you handle things, right, Fran, that leads to lots of comedy, especially if you knew your parents would move into your house.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm not a shrinking violet in this show. I mean, I enter a room and I kind of take it over, and it's my children's, problem to kind of adjust around this energy and these forces of life that they have. It's been many years since my son has lived with his parents. And now for the parents to come live with him, it's a real intrusion. But at the end of the day, I think that what solidifies the whole thing is that there is a genuine love amongst the family. And so everybody puts up with each other.
And then and also a comedy, Adam, that could happen, right? And it could happen that the parents...
Yeah.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus Mission USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
Happen that the parent,
yeah,
and
I think
so
it,
especially
it very well happen, and if it if it happened to me, you never hear from me again.
I'd be happy if it happened to me.
Well, if they somehow could, if they could be a great built-in babysitter, that's what again what grandparents are, a great built-in babysitter and great opportunity.
They don't trust us though.
Sometimes.
Oh geez, that's not good. Well. And there you go. But again, anything that has you two on it, I know it's going to be a success for sure. And everyone needs to tune in February 6th at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on NBC. And it's great chatting with you, Fran. And again, anyone in the world knows who you are because of The Nanny and so many of the other great projects you've done. And Adam, continued success. So I appreciate you both calling.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
very
you.
All right. Take care, guys. See you later. See ya. All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
You're listening to Neil Haley's show, and we'll be back in just a moment. So inspired, you got to reach out to them on their website. But Dr. Hall, that's how we operate here on the Dr. Christopher Hall Show and also the Neil Haley Network.
Well, definitely. I'm doing great today. I'm very excited about our guest today.
Yeah, I am too. I'm a big fan of his. And anytime we talk Steelers, it's a perfect week to just talk about a big win. So we're both smiling for sure at Dr. Hall. So go ahead and introduce our guest.
Well, awesome. We know it's my pleasure and great honor to introduce our distinguished guest, a glowing light of inspiration for young people around the world, a champion on the football field and in the classroom, recently retired Pittsburgh Steelers and now noted author, Mr. Arthur Most. Arthur, welcome to the show.
Man, I appreciate you, man. And that was an awesome introduction, by the way. You have me feeling very distinguished over here, man.
Hey, you are distinguished, Arthur. You're not giving yourself credit for the thing. So I'm just going to take you back in certain ways of your going back to your childhood, Arthur, and kind of talk about what kind of family did you grow up in? And did you always have that aspiration to play football?
Yeah, so for me, I grew up in Norfolk, Virginia, right down by Virginia Beach. And growing up, man, it was definitely humble beginnings, but both of my parents were pastors and my father was he had recently retired out of the Marines after doing 13 years of service. So it was a ton of discipline. It was a ton of just always being positive mindset, positive reinforcements, and that type of mentality and attention to detail. And early on, I knew I wanted to play football. I knew I wanted to make it to the NFL. And where a lot of people were reading the statistics and telling me how hard or daunting of a task that was, they were always the two believing in me, saying that I could do it if I put my mind to it. I could do it if I did the little things right and stuff like that, man. So that was my upbringing, and that really helped set the stage for me to make it to the NFL and have the career that I did have.
And see, that's why I already handpicked. I said, Arthur's a perfect guest for you, Dr. Hall, because it goes back to, again, things that we talk about in overcoming odds, but also having that mindset, are, you know, surrounding yourself with the right people, Dr. Hall.
Definitely. And, you know, being a veteran myself, I certainly appreciate your father's service there.
Man, I appreciate your service as well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, you know, Arthur, you certainly have overcome a lot of adversity. You know, kind of beginning when you were a young person. Tell us what it was like going to school in the inner city school and growing up where you did.
Yeah, man, when you're growing up in the inner city of Norfolk and stuff like that, you definitely see some very rough sights, whether it's people who are abusing opioids and things like that, different shootings and violence and stuff like that. Obviously, in the school systems, there isn't a lot of money allocated to the school. So from a resources standpoint, your textbooks are typically older or they are damaged. A lot of them, I remember always having duct tape and thinking that that's normal for the book until you get to college and you're like, oh, this is what a new book looks like.
But
the biggest thing for me was just understanding that regardless of the cards I was dealt, regardless of my circumstances, don't let that dictate what I want to be. Don't let that dictate what my future can be. I always felt that if I put my mind to something, if I put the effort into it, that I could achieve it. And that's how I treated my schoolwork. That's how I treated when I made it to the NFL. And then also when I got my master's degree and then when I went on to write a book. Those were my biggest things, though. It's like when I set my mind to do something, regardless of the circumstance, regardless of my current situation, I can't let that deter me from my ultimate goal.
So you set goals for yourself, which is such an important part of it, Arthur. And you talked about your family background. So even though you grew up in a not well-to-do home, you grew up in a very good family atmosphere. You went through the difficulties and challenges of an inner city school, as Dr. Hall brought up. When you deal with all that stuff and set goals for yourself, but the people around you don't set those goals, how do you kind of stay grounded to make sure you do follow through on those things? And that's where your whole process of the book now is the motivational. We'll get to that later in this interview. But really, it's all about the whole focus of motivation and how you self-motivated yourself through those challenges.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It can be very difficult to find motivation from outside sources when people around you doubt it or people around you doubt you, or they don't believe in what you're trying to accomplish. But for me, the thing that I realized was I can't look for motivation elsewhere, because there's so many examples of people that don't do it the right way. So many examples of people that want to have the quick route to success, the easy route. But for me, I learned that if I just take it one step at a time, one day at a time, and I continue to be my biggest cheerleader, that I can achieve anything. I can overcome any obstacle. And by no means am I saying that I've achieved everything that I wanted to achieve. And by no means have I never failed. In fact, I failed a ton of times. But for me, I don't let the fear of failure paralyze me. I looked at it as, let me take that fear and use it as a motivational tool. Let me use that instead of it being a blockage in front of me. Let me use it as a pushing force behind me to help me overcome some of these obstacles.
And Dr. Hall, that's very interesting what Arthur was bringing up about, again, going through adversity and pushing through those things, that it makes you stronger. And we hear stories, Dr. Hall, of successful people like yourself, that you were going through a lot of adversity, but you set yourself towards that when you talked about your book and going through and helping young people, is that you overcame those adversities. Right, Dr. Hall?
You know, you're exactly right, Neil. And, you know, Arthur makes a great point that, you know, it's really not necessarily the adversity what happens to you, but how you react to it. But you know, Arthur, I know certainly your parents were probably, you know, role models for you growing up, but did you have any other role models, historical figures, or maybe even people you saw on television when you were growing up?
Yeah, man, for me growing up, I had a couple of people that I really looked up to. Number one was Martin Luther King. Understanding how he could set his eyes on something that he viewed as negative or something wrong and motivate so many people to follow him to change that. And then not only him, but then Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson was big for me because coming from my hometown, he was a guy that I could look to and say, man, we look just alike. He has braids. I have braids. He's from this area. I'm from this area. But he's had to overcome some things. I'm overcoming things. But now this is when he's with the 76ers. I'm like, here he is having success playing for NBA championship right now. And sometimes it takes you seeing people that have had rough journeys, but could be successful for you to say, okay, there is a model of this. Because I feel like for a lot of people, if they don't see an example of it, sometimes it's hard for them to just be the innovator and say that, okay, I'm going to be the first to do this. I feel like once you get that blueprint, though, like for me, seeing Allen Iverson's blueprint, seeing Dr. Martin Luther King and his blueprint, for me, that led to me being able to formulate my own journey, my own path based off of those two guys.
That's amazing that you talk awesome. About that, because you saw somebody who grew up in your neighborhood and was successful, and you said, well, I want to go ahead and be, if he can do it, I can do it. Arthur, did you ever get a chance to meet Allen Iverson?
No, I actually never did, not directly, at least. Obviously, through social media is one thing, but to have that direct person-to-person contact, I have not.
Even after your career in sports, never been an event or anything with near him. That's wild to think that.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it was funny, though, the other guy, Allen Iverson was the biggest one, but Michael Vick was another guy, and I actually did have a chance to be his teammate here in Pittsburgh, so that was a surreal moment for me during that phase as well, because he's another guy from my hometown, had success, had to overcome obstacles, and still be able to defeat the odds.
Right, and that's the too bad thing that we don't look at in society, Arthur, and I'm bringing this up because, again, this is all about motivation and overcoming, is Michael Vick did some wrong things. He made the wrong decisions,
absolutely,
but he overcame those obstacles and changed his life and has done some great things, and still people want to down him. And that's too bad, because people kind of, at times in our lives, we're going to do things that really we aren't proud of, but we're broken, but we can fix ourselves to make a difference. And Michael Vick's done that. Isn't that correct? That doesn't show up in the media sometimes of what he did.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In terms of, you know, just hitting on what he did post being released from prison and stuff like that, the activism that he's done in terms of animal awareness, dog awareness and stuff like that, and then just the amount of money that he's allocated to those type of foundations and organizations, I mean, it's been nothing short of awesome. But that's the nature of the world we live in, the culture that we live in. It takes, you know, years to become a successful person, years to build your reputation. You have a lapse in judgment. And even after you have served your time or you've, you know, experienced your punishment from it, it still lingers. And that's just the unfortunate element of it. But the thing that I liked so much about him post that incident is that he was open about it. He hasn't been trying to hide about it. And I feel like a lot of times as guys in particular, we like to not be so open when it comes to our shortcomings, our failures, when it comes to things that we aren't very proud of. We like to be very secretive about it. But for him, man, he puts it on his sleeve and he wears it. And ultimately, I think that he's grown to become a better person for that.
Absolutely. And that's where, again, Pittsburgh did open up the doors for him and there were protesters, but there were people that had said, hey, we'll give you a second chance. And that's what Pittsburgh is a place that gives people a second chance for sure, compared to others.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what's so great about it. They all, because of this, just this mentality of Pittsburgh, and for sure. So Dr. Hall, again, we're learning about Arthur and the two big role models that he saw that were athletes that went on to become professionals. So Dr. Hall, what's your next question for Arthur?
Well, you know, I guess we want to talk a little bit about the book.
That's great.
I like it.
Yeah, sure. So tell us about that. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think the thing is, you've written a very important book, The Moat Theory of Life, A Guide to Becoming a Person of Impact and Inspiration. And we know it's not an autobiography, so you tell us about it.
Yeah, man. So the biggest thing when I was writing this book, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't an autobiography, because I feel like so many athletes or even just people of status, when they retire or at certain points in their life, they feel the need to write an autobiography. And once you read it once, it's pretty much irrelevant after that. So for me, I wanted to create something that could be used multiple times. I was thinking more of a literature, like a textbook. You read it at one point in your life, it has an impact on you, it helps you. You read it at another point in your life, it can still help you. And it didn't matter which age you were. So that was why I wanted to make it important for the inspirational element and the impactful element. And when we talk about the theory of life for the moats, for me. All right, yeah, so man, when We're talking about the chapters. The first one, M, stands for making happiness a priority, because a lot of people, they don't view themselves as their happiness as a priority. They want to please other people, and they never figure out what truly makes them happy, what their purpose truly is. So I always try to make sure that that needs to be one of the
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. We shake up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
For O, openness yields strength. A lot of guys, in particular men, we like to avoid being open about our feelings, about our issue, about our issues and our shortcomings. I think it's important to be transparent with the people that you hold close, because that will help you grow and that'll help the people around you grow. For A, actively seek to inspire. I think that it's important that we inspire others, because you never know who you could be inspiring and what they might be able to accomplish as well. And ultimately, it will lead to all of us being better people and having a better world. And then for T, turning fear into focus. We talked about that a little bit earlier, but people a lot of times will set a goal and then they will be scared to go for it because they don't want to fail. They don't want to look crazy. And I say, instead of using that fear and letting it block you, put it behind you and let it be a pushing force. Let it motivate you to take that leap, to do something that you thought you couldn't do. And then for S, I said smile. And that's, I break it down as S-M-I-L-E, spread my inner love everywhere. Because I feel like we all naturally are good people. We all naturally have a positive soul. And when we smile at somebody, just think about how contagious it is. Think about how you can have the worst day ever, but if somebody smiles at you, you just naturally smile back. You naturally feel better about yourself. So that's why I thought it was important to have that in there. And ultimately, man, I feel like when you read the book and you really deep dive into these chapters and see the examples I give, people are going to have a better understanding and ultimately be better people for it.
Arthur, and I wanted to kind of jump back specifically when you look at each one of those areas and levels to talk about. Is there one thing in each one of them that you could say, because again, you mentioned all of it, they got to buy the book, but is there one component you look at for yourself that you say real simple things that our listeners can do right now involving that those strategies?
Yeah, man. So let's see. We talked about, I guess, you want me to go from chapter to chapter, or just one thing as a whole?
Just one thing as a whole, just to kind of.
Okay, yeah. So I'll say the easiest thing would be openness. Being open, having openness yields strength. So for me, it started this simple. And I talk about this a lot more in depth in the book. I talked about how just a simple, when I would have a conversation with my wife, whether I was happy or sad or whatever it may be, and she's like, hey, how are you feeling today? Oh, I'm good. Or are you tired? No, I'm good. I'm all right. I'm good. Nothing's ever wrong with me. Even though it was times where I was miserable with situations at work, where I was upset with other family issues with my parents or my siblings and things like that, and how it would affect our relationship just because I didn't simply say, well, actually, babe, I'm a little upset about this. Or actually, babe, I'm a little tired because of this. And just a simple thing like that changed the trajectory of me and my wife's marriage.
Oh, wow. That's powerful. And they definitely got to look at picking up the book based on those things. And so, Arthur, what is your ultimate goal with this book?
Man, my ultimate goal is for this book to just impact lives. I want it to be something that when people read this, they say, man, this helped me. This changed my life for the better. Because ultimately, I feel like that's what I was put on this earth to do, was to have that positive impact on people. I tried to make sure I did that through my career with some of the philanthropic efforts that I did. And I want to make sure that that continues through this book. This is something that can be timeless. It doesn't matter, like I said, how old you are. It doesn't matter if you're reading it today or if you read it again a year from now, you're always going to be able to find something in this book to help you be a better person. And that's ultimately my goal for this book.
Well, I can't believe when you talk about those areas, Dr. Hall, what are your thoughts? I mean, again, it's such an inspiring thing, and that people can kind of look at each one of the letters in his name and say, okay, this is what I got to work on. This is what I got to improve.
Exactly. I mean, and those are certainly very important points of wisdom that he's laid out there. And so this is great because we know that millions of young people in America are listening to this message. And Arthur, he's a person of high energy. He has lifted lots of spirits over the years. He's philanthropy. I mean, he's donated a large part of his income to charity and those things. And so we're very happy that he's published this book and that he's been a great example for our young people.
Man, I definitely appreciate those kind words, too.
All right, so we're going to jump to something real quick, Arthur, because we have you on the show and we have the opportunity because of your busy schedule with the fan and all the different projects you're doing to talk about your greatest moment as a Steeler. And then also, I guess, in the NFL, kind of going to, you know, all the other teams versus the Steelers. What was your greatest moment playing for the Steelers?
Man, so my greatest moment playing for the Steelers would have to be in 2014 when we won the division on a Sunday night game versus Cincinnati Bengals. And the reason is, that was my first time ever having, number one, a winning season, but number two, winning any type of division championships at the NFL level. That's why it was like so important to me that we were able to do that. And me being a key part of it in terms of making plays throughout the season to get us to that point. For me, that's a season, that's a moment that will always, you know, be near and dear to my heart.
Wow, that's a great moment. What about NFL, other teams you played for? Greatest moment.
Yeah, and then my other greatest moment, man, would definitely have to go back to my rookie season playing against the Minnesota Vikings, being able to have the big play, the big hit on Brett Favre. He had the starting streak for, I think it was 297 games. I hit him. He doesn't play the next week due to the hit and due to him getting hurt. And literally that Iron Man streak being broke after it lasts for – 20, like something crazy in terms of the amount of seasons, almost 20 seasons, I believe. And you think about the different amount of Hall of Famers that had hit him, the different Pro Bowls, All Pros that had hit him, had sacks against him, and he would still be able to come back the next week. And the fact that I was a part of a legendary moment like that, for me, man, I always hold that near and dear in my heart.
All right, Dr. Hall, next question for Arthur.
Well, yeah, you know, Arthur, he's kind of outlined some attention. And again, you know, he stated that he played 9 years. You know, we know the average time is only about 3 years.
Yeah.
And so he's had some difficult times, particularly, I think, when he had the teams there probably, and it's about the fourth season. And so that's a lot of pressure on a person. How are you able to handle that kind of pressure?
Yeah, man, for me, I think the biggest thing when it came to pressure, I looked at it as, if they're asking me or the expectation is of me to do something that I don't feel I'm capable of doing, then I would view that as pressure. But for me, I always thought that I was capable of being a leader. I always thought I was capable of making plays for a team. I always thought that I was capable of being a key contributor on winning teams. And that was always my mindset when it came to these seasons, regardless of what was going on or what was being said. So that was how I always viewed the pressure and how I would handle it, so to speak.
That's a great answer. Now, life great. After football, Arthur. Now I talked about the fan. I keep promoting, you being having a show now. How did it develop, life after football? Did you have a plan?
I actually did, man. So when we talked about life after football, this had been in the works for probably the past 2 to 3 years. Going into my third year here in Pittsburgh after I signed my contract extension, I had a time where I was contemplating retiring then. And it wasn't, like I said, an ability thing. It was just I was starting to feel a little burnt out. I was starting to feel a little less enthused about the grind. And when I speak of the grind, I'm talking the workouts in the morning, the nutrition, the film study and things like that. But I was like, as long as I still had that itch to play and I wanted to be great, then I was going to continue. But when I started having those feelings, I started seeing, okay, what do I want to do? So I went to the broadcast boot camp and I was like, okay, I love this by the NFL, being able to work with guys like James Brown, talk with guys like Ross Tucker and guys who've been in the media industry and had success.
Right.
And from there, I was like, I think I really want to do this media thing. So before I signed with Arizona, I was a free agent and I was contemplating retiring then, and I had an offer to do some color commentary stuff. But literally the day I get the offer for the color commentary job is the same day the Cardinals called me and offered me a contract. And I had the conversation to go with my wife, and I'm like, man, I really want to just hop into this media thing. And she's like, well, do you still want to play at all? And I'm like, I do a little bit. And for there, it was like, okay, let's go out there. But when I got hurt and I got put on injury reserve, it really was a blessing in disguise, because it helped me with my transition. It helped me be able to start doing some media work in a freelance variety. And then after I signed an injury settlement and I came back to Pittsburgh, they welcomed me back with open arms. They had let me do a radio show with them on their Steeler Nation radio, and then started doing some of their social media work. And then from there, that carried over into this year, which is officially, I guess, my first year as a retired NFL player or a former player. And it just opened so many doors in terms of me being able to do radio shows with the fan, do radio shows, like I said, with the Steelers, be a part of their media team from a social media standpoint and some of their pregame work and things like that. And then also being able to do some studio analyst stuff. So this was a plan that, like I said, for the past 2 to 3 years was definitely in the works.
I see you as a national guy, Arthur. Is that going to happen?
I definitely appreciate that.
I really just think you have the right talent. You're very articulate in your conversations, and you understand the game. It's a process, right? It's almost like who in that industry as well, because no one wants to get off out of the broadcast booth, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. For me, that definitely is a plan of mine. That's a goal of mine. And I've set a timetable for myself, and I have to remind myself a lot of times that this is just my first year out. I haven't even been a full year. But I've been able to accomplish a lot thus far in terms of the opportunities I've been allotted through radio and television. So for me right now, I'm focused on just continuing to keep my feet to the ground, my head down, and just working each day and building up that resume, building up these reps. Because I said, just like football, I didn't wake up and be an NFL player. It took years for me to get to that level. And then once I got there, I had to work that much harder to stay there. So I treat the media business the exact same way. I make sure that I study myself. I study film of other broadcasters and radio personalities or TV personalities that I think do a really good job. And I try to take bits and pieces from each one. And the things that I think help me out, I use. And the things that I don't, I tend to not use. But that's ultimately how I have been progressing through this thing. And like I said, man, that being a goal in terms of making it to the national ranks, that definitely is something I'm working towards.
I believe he will. Dr. Hall, last question you have for Arthur.
Well, it's, he's answered, almost every question I can think of. Words really kind of express, and time's really not enough to really explain just the greatness he's done. He talks about education. He leaves out a little bit. He earned his master's degree while he was still playing professional football. He made sure to go back and get that degree from James Madison. So I'm just very excited that he has basically taken God's path and inspired these young people here in America. So thank you, Arthur.
Man, I definitely appreciate you, man. It definitely means a lot to me.
Arthur, your book, and learn more about you. Arthur, where's the best
place to go? So MotesTheory.com. Yeah, it's just MotesTheory.com. That has all the information up there. And then obviously my personal website is ArthurMotes55.com.
All right, fabulous. Thanks for coming on. You and I are definitely going to connect again for sure in Pittsburgh. I'm glad you're back in Pittsburgh, but I just see you as a great talent, and you have a lot of ability in this industry, and I know you're going to go to the highest level because you want to work hard to learn it. So best of luck in your broadcasting career and your speaking career, and I appreciate you calling.
Man, I definitely appreciate you again.
All right, take care, guys. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. You're listening to Dr. Christopher Hall Show, and take care, guys. I was in college going through grad school, and my wife and I, after the whole day of, you know, hitting the books in grad school, working on our teaching, master's degrees, we would go and watch this The Veg, and it was just unreal to see something like this on television, where you could be tempted out of your relationship in that kind of way, and how it just really transform reality television, in my opinion, in that time.
You know, it was really early in the reality.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archived CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
In the reality craze, you know, we weren't sure it was going to be, you know, reality was going to even stick around. You know, Survivor come out, Big Brother come out, and then we came out in 2001. And, it was pretty revolutionary then, but I think it's even more relevant now than it was then.
It absolutely is, because you're tempted so much more by straying away from things because of the ability to have social media, to get text messages. There's just so many different ways of being tempted now. Put something out there
every
like
time
the show.
You open your phone.
Every time you open your phone, you just never know when somebody's going to proposition you. You never know when you might make the wrong decision or wrong choice, because people don't have boundaries anymore. And it's not just, okay, the person across the street or works with you anymore. It's a person that could be in another country. It could be anywhere. So people really see this as, wow, if they were right in front of me and I had the opportunity to cheat, would I? And that really brings out a question to lots of people when they watch the show.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way into this show is, would I cheat or wouldn't I cheat? But what really comes out of the show as you watch it is, what do I really want in a relationship, and what was I missing in my relationship? So, I mean, especially in this season, I mean, there are certain people on the show who have been completely faithful. They haven't cheated at all, and yet they're still there on the island because something wasn't working in their relationship. So I think it's a misnomer, or people don't get that going to the island and just not cheating isn't really the goal.
No.
The goal is to fill in the blanks of what wasn't working that had you show up in the first place.
And that's the situation is a lot of times we think, Mark, we understand relationships when we're in our 20s. And when I was watching the show, I was in my 20s. Now I'm in my 40s. So, and I still don't understand relationships. So in a lot of ways, even though I'm married, happily married 20 years, I still don't understand relationships and how women think and interact and how they change throughout their lives. That it's really challenging for somebody at a certain age point to really say, is this the right person? Do I really want to be with this person?
That's really astute what you just said, because I feel like, you know, it's certainly if you go 20s, 30s, 40s, when you say I love you, every time you think you're in love, it gets redefined.
Yes.
Every time your heart gets broken a little bit, the word love has a deeper meaning. And so I think for a lot of people on the show, what they called being in love was one thing, and then through this process, it gets redefined at a deeper level, and you either realize, hey, that wasn't love at all, or that's not what I want love to be. And or I was underestimating how much I am in love. So that's kind of what this experience is.
And everyone could see this at one point in time. If it goes back to their days of courting in high school, using courting. I don't know what I'm saying that for. I'm not that old. But you know what I'm saying.
You can get Shakespearean on this.
Okay. Where you're in love with this person. You love this person completely. And you don't know any of their quirks. You don't know any of their things that really are going to drive you nuts. And at a time when your relationship's at this breaking point where people want to break up so quickly, like the whole ghosting thing that never you and I would ever think about doing is done all the time, that young people today in their 20s, they just think, okay, I'm going to end the relationship, but I am afraid to tell someone why I want to end it. That's the difference of Temptation Island today versus Temptation Island in the 90s. I mean, right there.
You might be right. You might be right about that, and I think to some degree that people show up on the show, which really is sort of counterintuitive, but sometimes I think people show up on the show because subconsciously then they know the show is going to force them to confront the thing they're afraid to say in their own living room.
And you find out with the attractive people that are on this show that they have been propositioned by so many people. If you are attractive in any way or successful in any way, you're propositioned all the time, more than the show in the 90s, where you might be propositioned at work, you might be propositioned at the club, but now it's 24/7. So there's lots of different things.
Yeah, and not only that, it's Instagram and it's filtered. It's not even a real person. It's the best version of them. But as it goes to those tempters or to the propositioning, you got to remember that those singles that they meet, they take on a couple different roles. Certainly they could be potential lovers and they could be temptation, but they also become platonic sounding boards from the opposite sex that are, you know, often we get these relationships that are formed that are just pure friendships that are really informative as they try to figure out what they want and what they need.
And what is a great relationship? Is it a partnership? Is it something, or do we fall in love because of attraction? There's so many different ways of defining things today than in the 90s, where there wasn't so many places to choose and have opportunities in so many different ways.
In my opinion, I don't think it is any different from the 90s or the 1890s or the 1790s or the 1690s. That search for that special someone you're going to spend the rest of your life with is eternal and has basically fostered all the poetry and music and movies we've ever seen. It is more difficult to, I think it's harder today to be sure you're with the one you want to be with, because you can peruse people from all over the world that are, and talk to them with a click of your phone. So, you know, it's not just there are five girls in my town. I found the one that I love who loves me, and that's who I'm going to be with. Now it's every person I've ever met and people I see on TV I can contact, you know. So
it's scary.
The possibilities are endless, And so better becomes the evil of good, if you know what I mean.
Well, congratulations on the success of the show. And I always remember the first show, how it really taught people that, hey, if they truly love each other, they're not going to break up. And you see the love develop. And that's your goal in the show, is basically really to see, is this really the right relationship? We're going to give you this island. We're going to put you out here and look out and see what happens. And everyone, and Mark.
Yeah, I tell them.
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
I tell them every time, you know, I know you think this is going to be a breeze. This is going to be real quickly. So fasten your seatbelt. Here we go.
All right. So tune in tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern, every Thursday night to Temptation Island on USA Network. And Mark, thanks for calling. And you really brought me back to the 90s. It's interesting. And the people that are the 90s people need to tune into Temptation Island as well. Congratulations on your success.
There you go. Represent
and best of luck.
The 90s folks.
Exactly. All right.
Thanks, Neil.
Sound good, Mark. Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye. You listen to Neil Haley's show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Today's interview, with what I've seen, what you guys do, I'm so excited to learn more, because all I had to trust the expert while shopping for diamonds. I didn't understand exactly why, what was the difference. I just had to educate myself. And there's, I guess, a lot more available of experts like yourself than there were 20 plus years ago, right?
That's right.
It's something that you...
And the story of...
Go ahead, sorry, go ahead.
No. And the story of diamonds, you know, I think when people start the journey for, which is typically the first diamond investment piece is the engagement ring, is looking and exploring the four C's. But the story of diamonds and natural diamonds goes way beyond the four C's and hasn't really been told in new ways. So, you know, a Diamond Producers Association, we're here to really provide more insight and inspiration to instill trust and confidence in your diamond journey purchase.
All right. So talk to me about natural diamonds. What does the process look like?
So most people don't know that a natural diamond is probably the oldest thing you'll ever own or wear. Natural diamonds are billion-year-old miracles of nature.
Oh, really?
And they have enduring inherent value because of their rarity and uniqueness. Yeah, it's pretty crazy when you think about the fact that the youngest natural diamond record is 100 million years old. And, you know, people don't really have an appreciation of the genesis of natural diamonds. And it's really quite remarkable. And because of their natural formation, you know, every single diamond is unique. So like each of us, every, you know, natural diamond that you choose for yourself or for your loved one is unique.
See, I, again, wouldn't have known that specifically enough when they talk about this, but are natural diamonds rare?
Yeah, there's, you know, some misconceptions around the rarity of natural diamonds, but indeed they're incredibly rare. Kimberlites, if you will allow me just get a bit sciencey
sure,
for a moment.
Perfect.
Kimberlites, the ancient underground volcanic pipes that hold most of today's diamonds, are incredibly hard to find. And in fact, most of the diamonds recovered today come from kimberlites that were discovered decades ago. And diamonds are becoming rarer every day because no new discoveries have been made in about, I would say, 20 to 30 years. And we just did a study recently, and we were able to actually measure that the total amount of 1-carat diamonds recovered annually and globally would fit just inside one exercise bowl. So that helps put things in perspective.
Oh, it definitely does. And you kind of can see those differences. So I'm increasingly reading more about industrial diamonds made at high temperatures in factories. What are the differences between manufactured diamonds and natural diamonds? And why should consumers care?
Yeah, excellent question, because there seems to be a lot of confusion out there. But industrial man-made diamonds, otherwise known as lab-grown diamonds, you know, while they claim to be the chemically the same as natural diamonds, there are big differences. And I guess the first is the origin. You know, they are made in factories, and they're trying to replicate a billion-year process over a period of 2 or so weeks. And that, as you can imagine, requires a tremendous amount of heat actually hotter than the surface of the sun. And imagine the water required to cool that. So, you know, these lab-grown diamonds, they position themselves as an eco-friendly alternative, but it's still unclear, you know, if indeed that's the case, because data shows otherwise, and the Federal Trade Commission is also calling out lab-grown diamonds to substantiate these claims. But I think what's really important during the season, when the peak season of diamond shopping, is to understand that, you know, that lab-grown diamonds and natural diamonds are different, and they can be detected with the right instrument, but their value proposition is very different. You know,
yes.
Lab-grown diamonds are about, I think, 40% less than natural diamonds, but that rate continues to decline. I mean, it's a tech product, right? And with, you know, economies of scale, you know, the value, the price will continue to drop. So, you know, is there a place...
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. We shake up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.